This is a When Walls Can Talk network podcast.
Have you ever experienced one of those dreams that grip you with such emotional and visceral intensity, blurring the lines between reality and the ethereal, that you're left questioning your own existence? Those dreams where you awaken, heart pounding, and spend the rest of your day trying to discern if what you felt was real or conjured by your subconscious. Well, imagine this kind of dream. You find yourself in a school hallway, not unlike many you've seen yourself before. Lockers line the walls, classroom doors stand ajar, but then you notice something unusual. It's the silence. A silence that's almost too heavy, too charged, as if the air itself is waiting for something to shatter it. Well, in this case, it's not a dream, or even the beginning of a horror movie. In 1979, at the Miami Aerospace Academy, the school day started like any other. But as the day moved forward, reality took a sharp detour. Students, poised at the edge of adulthood, found themselves thrust into a narrative as old as time itself, yet as fresh as tomorrow's headlines. So terrifying, it seems practically impossible to have actually occurred. What happened next was not an act of rebellion, not the usual mischief you'd expect in a place brimming with youthful energy. In this case, it was something other. A student, suddenly suspended in the air in front of her peers, not by wires, not by trickery, but by something unseen. Around her, a tableau of faces frozen in shock, mouth agape, eyes wide. Fear, palpable and raw, cutting through the fabric of logic and reason. But let's step back for a moment. To understand the gravity of this event, we must dive into the depths of one of the most ancient human beliefs, where the most profound of folklore, religion, and science intersect. Possession, a concept as old as civilization itself, found a home in the most unlikely of places, a classroom. But how and why? In an instant, the Miami Aerospace Academy became a battleground between reality and perception. And for us today, it continues to reflect our deepest fears back at us. What does it mean to be in control? To be truly free? These questions, usually left to philosophers and poets, were suddenly stark and pressing. What happens when the walls we've built between the possible and the impossible crumble? Sometimes, the most profound truths are found not in the light, but in the darkness. Today we unravel the story of the Miami Aerospace Academy, perhaps the greatest story of mass possession that you've never heard of. I'm Jeremy Haig, and grab your Florida water and crucifixes, 'cause this is When Walls Can Talk. Throughout the ages, man has repeated the same earnest saying, more of a question really, or perhaps even a plea, if these walls could talk. But what if they do? And always have. Perhaps their stories, memories, and messages are all around us, if only we would take the moment to listen. On this podcast, we reinvestigate legends and tales of the past and allow the echoes of their lessons to live on once again, informing us, educating us, and sharing new and unique insight into the inner workings of the paranormal and spiritual world. Will you dare to listen? This is When Walls Can Talk, the podcast. Human belief is like an intricate mosaic. Colorful stones of many different colors, shapes, and hues, all that somehow come together in the wet cement of an elaborate design. The concept of possession across peoples and historical ages is no exception. A vibrant thread that weaves its way through the fabric of cultures and epochs, forming a narrative rich in complexity and depth. This notion that an external force, whether deemed spiritual, demonic, or ethereal, could usurp the human form, steering the soul's vessel with inexplicable and unknowable intent, resonates with a profound and eerie universality. Venture back to the incense-laden ziggurats of ancient Sumer, where priests engaged in rituals to banish malevolent spirits believed to afflict the body and mind, giving birth to the earliest recorded exorcisms. These ancient ceremonies laid the groundwork for a tradition that would echo through the ages, humanity's enduring battle with forces perceived as both external and internal. In Hindu scriptures, tales of deities possessing mortals to achieve their own divine intents intertwine with the accepted idea of spiritual life, suggesting a cosmos where the boundaries between the divine and the human are permeable and intersecting. In these circumstances, possession becomes a conduit for divine intervention, a complex interplay between celestial will and human agency. The Zondi people of Africa's belief in witchcraft itself as a pervasive force, and the shamanic traditions found in Siberia, both offer a glimpse into humanity's diverse interpretations of possession. These beliefs and cultural perspectives underscore the universal quest to understand and navigate the unseen forces that influence our lives. They remind us that, across cultures, there exists a shared acknowledgement of a world beyond our tangible reality, where spirits and entities play a pivotal role in the narrative of human existence. In the shadow-draped chambers of medieval Europe, the drama of possession and exorcism unfolds with a fervor that seems almost mythic. These stories, steeped like hot tea into the ethos of European folklore, speak to a time where the line between the physical and the spiritual was blurred, and the fear of the demonic was as real as the unshakable stones of the cathedrals. Fast forward to the candlelit quarters of the Vatican, where the practice of exorcism is not consigned to ancient times, but continues to evolve to this day. The Church's acknowledgement of possession and exorcism in the modern era underscores a fascinating dichotomy. The coexistence of age-old rituals alongside the digital age's empirical rationality. This juxtaposition of the spaces that science cannot illuminate, where faith in the metaphysical reigns supreme, is a powerful one. This unanswerable shadow, in and of itself, some might say, is what makes the concept and possibility of possession so utterly terrifying to many, even the most staunch of atheists and agnostics. The theme of possession extends far beyond the limitations of written human history, rooted in the bedrock of our earliest ancestral beliefs. Before the first scribe etched symbols into clay, or the first storyteller recounted tales under the starlit sky, there was an intrinsic awareness of forces unseen, spirits that could cross the veil between worlds. This primordial understanding becomes a universal truth recognized across the expanse of human existence, the presence of entities beyond our physical realm that can, for better or worse, interact with our mortality and humanity. Across human cultures, the perception of these entities varies widely. In some traditions, spirits are seen as guardians, ancestors who provide guidance and protection. The ancient Egyptians, for example, communicated with the dead, seeking their intercession and wisdom, viewing possession not as an invasion, but as a sacred communion. Conversely, in other cultures, possession is feared as a malevolent force, an unwanted intrusion by predatory spirits seeking to harm or manipulate the living. A dichotomy of benevolence and malevolence, as multifaceted as human nature itself. The universality underscores its significance in the human narrative. It connects us to our most distant ancestors, a shared understanding that transcends time, geography, and culture. From my perspective, this exploration is not merely academic. It is deeply personal and, in my eyes, wildly imperative. Through my own experiences, I have come to recognize the nuanced relationships we share with the entities that exist alongside us, unseen but ever-present. The question that gnaws at most of us is this: what happens when you're possessed? If we entertain the possibility that unseen entities can use our bodies and minds as instruments, what impact does this have on us? Science, often seen as the tangible and measurable, and often at odds with the spiritual, may not fully explain the phenomenon of possession, but it does offer insights into the physical and psychological manifestations associated with it. From a scientific perspective, conditions such as dissociative identity disorder and mass hysteria echo similar symptoms traditionally ascribed to possession. These include dramatic changes in personality, loss of consciousness, and even physical alterations. Stress, belief systems, and the power of suggestion have also been shown to manifest physically in the body, leading to symptoms, especially in heightened situations, that could be interpreted as possession. If we accept the premise that possession truly occurs, the physical symptoms experienced by the possessed, convulsions, changes in voice, extreme strength, and even alterations in consciousness, suggest a profound interaction between the entity and the host's physical body. Scientifically, these symptoms could be attributed to the brain's reaction to extreme psychological stress or to the activation of latent parts of the psyche. Yet from a spiritual perspective, these manifestations could be seen as the physical imprint of the unseen, a tangible echo of the entity's presence within the human form. From my perspective, the existence of one does not exclude or preclude the other. Skeptics may insist upon a scientific answer, but I see the more probable reality of a scientific or physical symptom. The question of what these entities are doing to the body of the possessed invites us to consider the possibility of a deeper, more symbiotic relationship between the physical and the spiritual. It challenges us, and the concept of science in general, to explore the limits of our physical human experience and to consider how the unseen forces that have captivated our ancestors' imaginations continue to influence us today. Now let's cast ourselves back to the electric, uneasy 1970s America, a landscape dominated by a cultural undercurrent of fear and fascination, palpably charged by the phenomenon known as the Satanic Panic. This was a cultural maelstrom where the devil didn't just dance in the details, but took center stage in the collective psyche, propelled into the limelight by the cinematic shockwave of The Exorcist and other films. The devil, it seemed, had found a new residence, not in the depths of hell, but in the screens of American cinemas, and by extension, the subconscious corners of the national imagination, or so it was perceived. This decade was the set for a real-life horror show all over the country, where the supernatural became the suspected culprit behind unexplained phenomena, propelling an influx of demonic possessions and satanic rituals into the headlines. It became the backdrop for collective neuroses and media-fueled paranoia upon which certain events, otherwise mundane, were cast in a sinister light, becoming symbols of a nation grappling with its deepest anxieties and making it nearly impossible to discern the real from the fabricated. Thick with the scent of suspicion and the supernatural, the Miami Aerospace Academy became the epicenter for such an incident, so bizarre it has seemingly vanished from our cultural memory by the sheer terror of it. This is, without any doubt, the most significant paranormal event in U.S. history. Intrigued? October 25th, 1979. Just days shy of Halloween, the routine of a Miami military academy, an establishment of discipline and academia, suddenly veers into the demonic. The students, known as cadets and more accustomed to the regimented military-style life than to the unpredictable whirlwind of the supernatural, find themselves in the throes of an ordinary school day. Classes in session, minds wandering between textbooks and weekend plans, the morning is remarkably ordinary. Yet in a heartbeat, the narrative shifts from the familiar to the realm of absolute chaos. Without warning, a cadet bolts from her seat, darting down the hallway and slicing through the classroom's calm like a shockwave. Instinctively, her peers are on their feet, drawn into their wake as they chase her down the corridor to the girls' bathroom. They watch in panic as she writhes, her words slurred and spat with an unfamiliar venom. "The devil is inside of me." The proclamation is as petrifying as it is unfathomable, marking the onset of what appears to be a descent into demonic possession. Before the eyes of her bewildered classmates, in the throes of her turmoil, the young woman seems to defy gravity itself. It's as if the very air around her conspires to defy the given laws of physics, taunting gravity and lifting her from the ground, presenting a vision so starkly at odds with the world they know, a vignette that echoes of humans' most ancient fears and iconic horror imagery. A malevolent force, unbound and indiscriminate, has indeed swept through the academy. It's as if the very air they breathe is now laced with a contagion of the spiritual kind. The teacher stands at the threshold of the bathroom, peering into the chaos, realizing with a sinking heart that this is no mere adolescent jest. The school, a fortress of learning and order, has become the epicenter of an unfathomable storm. It struck with the precision of a predator, leaving in its wake a trail of confusion and fear. The cadets, trained for discipline, now stand at the mercy of an inexplicable horror. They are frozen, watching and witnessing their friend transformed by an unseen terror. In the midst of this chaos, another classroom remains blissfully unaware of the unfolding nightmare. That is, until violence erupts from the calm. Two cadets, previously engrossed in their studies, were now locked in a sudden, inexplicable clash. Desks and chairs became collateral in their fierce altercation, the room a battleground for reasons unknown. The crescendo of their conflict comes with a heart-stopping crash. One combatant is sent hurtling through a second-story window, a rainfall of glass shimmering in his wake. Both below and from the windows above, the onlookers brace for the grisly aftermath of this extraordinary fall. The boy, presumed grievously injured or dead, astonishingly rises unscathed. Onlookers recall his eyes burning red, his voice a guttural growl unbecoming of a human child. A staff member, spurred by duty, rushes to intervene, only to be met by a force that defies reason. Witnesses recount the boy's feral, wide-eyed demeanor, his strength, seemingly multiplied beyond human possibility. The once orderly passageways of the academy are now a labyrinth of havoc, with every turn revealing a new scene of inexplicable horror. The transformation is not just physical, but spiritual. Desks that bore the textbooks and notebooks of class are now barricades in a struggle against an unseen enemy. The screams that fill the air are not just expressions of fear, but calls to an unknown force that has infiltrated the very walls of the institution. The concept of friend and foe blurs, as those possessed exhibit behaviors alien to their true selves. The students, transformed, wield a strength that seems drawn from a wellspring of darkness, their actions guided by an impulse to wreak destruction. In a desperate bid to quell the pandemonium, the besieged administration of the Academy reaches out to Miami's law enforcement with a plea for help. The call made on October 25, 1979 was anything but ordinary. Dispatchers and officers could only listen in disbelief as descriptions of the scene painted a picture of bedlam. It was just chaos there. Kids are running everywhere, recalls one officer. As law enforcement arrived, they were met with scenes straight out of a nightmare. Groups of students, gripped by an unnameable fear, were scattering in all directions. They were frightened and were screaming. It was very chaotic, an officer describes. The cadets seemed to be not just running from something, but also, in some instances, morphing into something unrecognizable. Students were either engaged in violent outbursts, wanton destruction of the academy, or collapsing under the weight of sheer terror. As police officers attempted to restore order, their inquiries into the cause of the riot yielded chilling responses. Some of them had mentioned the devil, an officer recounted. The students themselves were convinced of a diabolical presence among them, claiming possession or asserting that the devil himself had infiltrated their ranks. Such admissions left even seasoned officers deeply unsettled. This type of incident is very unusual, and certainly this situation is the only one I have seen during my 40 years in the fire department, recalled one veteran, highlighting the singularly disturbing nature of the episode. The aftermath of this unprecedented chaos was not just physical damage to the school's infrastructure, but also psychological scars on the student body, with several cadets requiring hospitalization. The incident left a series of terrifying questions. What had seized control of these teenagers? How had a typical school day descended into a scenario so nightmarish that it defied all logic and understanding? My conviction, from years of experience and understanding the occult and paranormal, is that what transpired on that day was the result of forces beyond our ordinary comprehension. The largest known event of its kind on American soil, the incident at Miami Aerospace Academy, was a clear manifestation of demonic forces at play. The evidence speaks for itself. The girl levitating in terror, her chilling proclamation of demonic possession. The boy who, against all odds, emerged unscathed after a fall that should have been fatal, his eyes alight with a red otherworldly glow. The extraordinary feats of strength exhibited by the students. But this was no random occurrence. The seeds of this spiritual upheaval were sown long before that October day, lying dormant within the academy's walls until they erupted into chaos. It prompts us to ask, why here? Why now? What opened the door for such an unprecedented invasion of darkness? Well, I believe I may have the answers for you. The roots of the haunting episode at Miami Aerospace Academy can be traced back to the very atmosphere that enveloped the school. In a time when the nation was gripped by the satanic panic, the seeds of fear and fascination with the dark here at the school were already sown. It was the unique conditions within the academy's walls, where students felt marginalized, overlooked, and burdened by an oppressive environment, that created the perfect storm for what was about to unfold. I can tell you that these were not merely children experiencing the rigors of academic and military discipline. They were young souls struggling with feelings of isolation and neglect. The lack of adequate supervision and guidance meant that when the demonic chose to knock, there was no bulwark against its entry, no shield against the invasion that was to come. The worst-case scenario didn't just unfold. It was invited in. Welcomed by a collective, albeit accidental, vulnerability and a profound sense of despair. Peeling back the layers of daily life at the academy, the picture that emerges is one of a cauldron of discontent and disenchantment, a microcosm where the satanic panic that pervaded the air outside the school's confines only mirrored the turmoil within. This evil was manifested in the very fabric of the institution, and worked its malevolence not only through the vulnerability of the cadets, but also through the instruments of its will, El General himself. This was not merely a case of demonic possession. It was a systematic collapse, a spiritual contagion that capitalized on the already prevalent oppression. The demonic forces did not just visit the academy. They were embedded within its very structure, exploiting every crack and crevice of vulnerability. El General himself and his staff in their roles, whether as unwitting pawns or as part of a darker agenda, facilitated the conditions necessary for this paranormal upheaval to take full form. The foundation of the Miami Aerospace Academy, and the figure at its helm, El General, otherwise known as Evaristo Marina, paints a complex picture of authority, identity, and influence that seemed to predispose the institution to an event as harrowing as the mass possession witnessed. Marina, a man with a contentious reputation, symbolized to many the very essence of corruption and malevolence. His moniker, El General, was a mantle he adopted with zeal, an echo to a lost status that he yearned to reclaim in a land far from the one he had known. His story began in the Colombian Revolution, a seismic shift that uprooted lives and forced individuals like Marina to forge new identities amidst the rubble of their past. Arriving in the United States as part of the first wave of exiles, Marina found himself among a diaspora struggling to regain their footing in a society that did not recognize their former statuses. These were individuals of high esteem in their homeland, doctors, lawyers, professionals, who were suddenly relegated to menial jobs, their qualifications and experiences rendered moot by the absence of American credentials. Marina's journey from a person of influence in Cuba to a busboy in the United States, and eventually to the founder of a military academy where he could once again command respect and authority, is emblematic of a broader narrative of loss, adaptation, and the pursuit of power. His insistence on being called El General by his students was not merely a preference. It was an assertion of an identity he refused to let go of, a vestige of the power and respect he commanded before his exile. This reclamation of status, however, came at a cost. The oppressive atmosphere and the authoritarian regime he established at the academy created an environment ripe for unrest. The students, already navigating the challenges of adolescence, found themselves under the thumb of a man whose past was steeped in controversy and whose authority was absolute. In his quest to recapture the influence and respect he believed he once wielded, Evaristo Marina self-styled himself as El General, founding the Miami Aerospace Academy in the late 1960s. The Academy's foundational principles were based upon academics, discipline, and character building, reflecting Marina's vision of a rigorous environment that mimicked the military's structure and order. Marina positioned himself as a paragon of virtue and discipline to the 350 students under his care, declaring his life and actions as the blueprint for success and integrity. Yet beneath this veneer of mentorship and leadership lay a more contentious reality. Despite the military trappings he adorned himself with, Marina had never officially attained the rank of general, neither in the United States nor in his native Cuba. His military persona was, in many ways, a fabrication, enhanced by self-awarded commendations and unearned stars. This penchant for self-aggrandizement and the cultivation of a quasi-military environment did not go unnoticed. Critics and observers likened his behavior to that of a con man, someone adept at the art of deception, skilled in the manipulation of appearances for personal gain. Marina's narrative was one of self-promotion and community service, a tale he spun to secure the trust and admiration of the Academy's parents and the broader community, entrusting their children to a man they believed embodied the pinnacle of moral and disciplinary standards. Yet the reality of Marina's character and his methods of maintaining power and control within the Academy painted a much darker picture. His approach to discipline and authority, marked by an emphasis on power and punitive measures, suggested a man wrestling with his own inner demons. The staff he enlisted to enforce his regime were perceived not as educators, but as enforcers, his personal gang of authority figures imposing a regime of fear and discipline. One striking example involved a teacher who, alongside academic materials, would conspicuously place a .45 caliber handgun within his briefcase. This pervasive atmosphere of intimidation, where students navigated their daily routines under the watchful eyes of those meant to guide and protect them, fostered an environment far removed from the sanctuary of learning. The presence of fear was a constant companion, an ever-present shadow that darkened their educational experience. The climate of apprehension was by design. Marina's choice to employ non-accredited teachers was strategic, allowing him an unbridled control not only over his staff, but also over the narrative that flowed from within the school's confines. Such control ensured that the reality of life within the Academy's walls, a reality marred by the threat of abuse and authoritarian discipline, remained hidden from the outside world. The embodiment of this oppressive regime was Major McKentley. His habit of jingling keys and snapping his paddle against his leg, the ominous Big Ben paddle complete with drilled holes for added pain, became symbols of the Academy's harsh disciplinary practices. McKentley's approach to discipline was a clear manifestation of the environment Marina sought to cultivate, an environment where might ruled and fear was the order of the day. The diverse assembly of cadets within Miami Aerospace Academy's walls, ranging from the notoriously unruly to those earnestly seeking a future in military service, created a contentious ecosystem. The school purported to mold discipline and character, yet for many, it felt more like a crucible, testing the limits of their endurance and spirit. In this environment, the mere presence of a few troubled individuals served as justification for a system disproportionately anchored in control and punishment. These individuals were an excuse for El General to enact a form of governance that bordered on martial law, often at the expense of genuine education and nurturing. This heavy-handed approach fostered an atmosphere not of learning and growth, but of compliance and fear, a dynamic that left little room for the development of individual identity or the exploration of one's potential. The irony of this approach was that it not only failed to distinguish between the inherently mischievous and those merely in need of guidance, but it also amplified the very behaviors it sought to eradicate. In seeking to tame the wolves among them, the Academy's methods inadvertently threw everyone, the willing and the wayward alike, into an arena where survival depended not on personal development, but on adherence to a rigid, often oppressive set of expectations. This was the paradox at the heart of the Miami Aerospace Academy. The cadets, clad in military uniforms and set to the rigorous tempo of marching drills, found themselves ensnared in an environment that was as much about mental subjugation as it was about educational structure. These methodologies, classic in their application, are often associated with mind control and brainwashing, strategies designed not just to instruct, but to indoctrinate. The philosophy underpinning this approach was simple yet brutal. To master the mind, one must first subdue the body. Through relentless physical exercise, disciplined marching, and an unyielding schedule, the Academy sought to break down its cadets both emotionally and physically. This systematic dismantling of will and spirit was not incidental. It was central to the institution's modus operandi. Dissent, a natural byproduct of free thought and individuality, found no quarter within these walls. To challenge, to question, or even to falter, was to invite punitive measures that were swift and severe. The threat of corporal punishment, meted out with implements designed to maximize pain and humiliation, was ever present. But in such an environment, resistance takes on many forms, some deeply unsettling and unexpected. When faced with an authority that is both pervasive and malevolent, the avenues for rebellion are few and fraught with risk. The notion of countering this authoritarian rule with violence is dismissed not out of cowardice, but out of pragmatism. Instead, the question becomes one of strategy. How does one combat effectively such entrenched evil? The answer suggests a recourse to a higher, or perhaps deeper, form of power. In the face of earthly tyrants, the thought emerges. Might there be a force more formidable to invoke? A greater darkness to unleash against the darknesses that bind them? Before the harrowing events of October 25th, and directly leading up to it, this period was marked by a burgeoning interest in the occult across the nation. Astrologers, tarot card readers, and practitioners of various forms of magic found their services in unprecedented demand. For the students at the academy, many of whom felt powerless within the oppressive regime of El General, the allure of the dark arts offered a semblance of control, a potential means to reclaim their agency. Santeria, with its deep roots in African religious practices and steeped in the cultures of the people of Miami, offered an alternative to those seeking solace or power outside the mainstream. Its practices, brought to Cuba through the slave trade and subsequently to Miami, provided a cultural and spiritual framework that contrasted sharply with the rigidity of the academy's environment. Santeria rituals, which include animal sacrifice, became a point of fascination and, for some, a desperate measure to counteract the overwhelming oppression they faced daily. The blending of Santeria with elements of the occult among the students was more than mere curiosity. In their eyes, it was meant as an act of defiance, a search for a way out of their suffocating reality. The school, once a place of learning, transformed into a field where the battle lines between spiritual rebellion and survival were drawn. Tarot cards and spirit boards replaced textbooks, as sessions seeking guidance or perhaps retaliation became a part of the students' routine. This turn to the mystical, to practices considered by many as dark or forbidden, speaks to a reality where parental support was scant and the prospects of change dim. So they turned to the only source of power that seemed accessible. It was a risky venture, yet in their minds, the gamble was well worth it. Now here's the interesting part. It was the faculty members themselves who were catalysts for the academy's foray into the occult. It was educators, tasked with the guardianship and instruction of their students, who would introduce and encourage practices such as spirit boards and tarot cards without caution. This bewildering breach of trust, this dalliance with the unknown, sets a chilling precedent for what was to come. In the aftermath of the event, as denials poured forth from those once eager to explore the paranormal with their charges, the hypocrisy of their actions became glaringly apparent. No one, it seemed, was willing to shoulder the responsibility for having opened Pandora's box, for having blurred the lines between education and the metaphysical. The rules of engagement with the spirit world, as understood by any dabbler in the occult, were flagrantly ignored. Invitations were extended, perhaps inadvertently, to forces beyond the realm of human control. And these forces, according to lore, lie in wait for the perfect moment to assert their influence. This lack of foresight, or perhaps this underestimation of the occult's power, transformed the academy into something far beyond a simple teenage rebellion. The oppressive regime, the relentless discipline, and the culture of fear cultivated within the school's walls did not quell unrest. They amplified it, channeling it into a collective outcry for empowerment through the only means left available to the students, the supernatural. The question then arises, Could these beleaguered souls, united in their suffering and their yearning for retribution, have indeed summoned forces beyond their comprehension, turning their oppressors' own teachings against them? It's a notion that veers into the territory of horror fiction, yet the events at Miami Aerospace Academy suggest a terrifying possibility. That in their weakest moments, these students became conduits for something truly malevolent. A collective summoning born of desperation and the human desire for freedom, however dark the path to achieving it might be. The haunting events at the Miami Aerospace Academy cannot be fully understood without acknowledging the backdrop against which they unfolded. Miami, for all its allure as a sun-drenched haven for tourists, harbors shadows cast long ago by its tumultuous history. The legacy of the conquistadors, marked by bloodshed and conquest, has imbued the land with a sense of unrest. The foundations of this tropical paradise built upon layers of suffering and injustice. Reports from the 1970s, citing an astonishing number of demonic possessions treated in a Miami hospital, underscored the pervasive sense of malevolence that already seemed to cling to the city, suggesting that the scars of the past have seeped into the very soil. Against this landscape of hidden darkness, legends abound that amplify the city's mystique. The notion that the devil himself resides beneath Miami near an underground river, or the tales of La Llorona, a demonic force preying upon the fears of the innocent, weave a tapestry of supernatural lore that is as fascinating as it is foreboding. These stories, whether rooted in truth or the product of collective imagination, contribute to a palpable sense of unease, a feeling that beneath the surface of this modern metropolis lies a nexus of ancient powerful energies. It is within this charged atmosphere that the Miami Aerospace Academy stood, seemingly drawing unto itself the swirling negativity and darkness that pervaded the city. This convergence of malevolent forces, both historical and contemporary, created a vortex of negative energy that enveloped the school. Whispers and rumors painted a far more sinister picture of its founder, if that's possible, Evaristo Marina, known as El General. There was a suspicion that Marina might have been delving into the darker aspects of Santeria. The discovery of sacrificed animals in the vicinity and signs of Santeria throughout the school grounds, such as burnt pennies, which are traditionally interpreted as omens of spellcasting, cast a shadow over the academy. Santeria, in its essence, is a religion of dualities, balancing the forces of light and darkness, good and bad. However, the evidence found suggested a deviation from the religion's benign practices towards something far more malevolent. This deviation into the realm of black magic, characterized by blood sacrifices and tools used in the summoning of dark powers, marked a stark departure from the white magic associated with healing and protection. The students' perception of Marina as a practitioner of black magic only deepened their sense of vulnerability and desperation. Faced with an authority figure who wielded not just physical control, but potentially supernatural power, some students might have felt compelled to seek protection or retaliation through similar means. The line between curiosity and a search for escape from the oppressive realities of their daily lives became blurred as some students began to experiment with the occult themselves, lacking the maturity to fully grasp the potential consequences of their actions. Without proper guidance or understanding of the forces they were dabbling with, these students stood at the precipice of a dangerous proverbial cliff. The knowledge of the occult and the power of Santeria, possibly gleaned from their teachers and Marina himself, unwittingly laid the groundwork for what could escalate into a catastrophic demonic onslaught. This burgeoning interest in the dark arts, unsupervised and unchecked, was a ticking time bomb. A flirtation with infernal powers that could unleash chaos far beyond the confines of the academy. The crescendo of eerie occurrences at the Miami Aerospace Academy coincided with a period steeped in supernatural lore, the week of Samhain. This timing was far from coincidental. It harnessed centuries-old beliefs that suggest the barrier between our world and the realm of spirits is most fragile during this time. The Celts, ancient practitioners of these seasonal rites, held the conviction that the end of October marked a moment when the veil between the living and the dead was at its most transparent. It was a time when souls were believed to traverse these thin boundaries, making their presence known among the living. Emboldened by this ancient wisdom, the cadets at the academy embarked on their own foray into the spiritual world. Their actions, however, were fraught with naivete and a lack of understanding of the forces at play. In their attempts to pierce the veil, to make contact with the beyond, they inadvertently reached into the darker corners of the spirit world. The spirits they summoned were not the benign or ancestral spirits they might have hoped for, but entities that thrived on chaos and malevolence. On the eve before Halloween, 1979, beneath the balmy shroud of a Miami night, the Miami Aerospace Academy was teetering on the edge of this unseen abyss. This particular evening was a prelude to the unraveling, a gathering storm that would soon engulf the Academy in a maelstrom of paranormal chaos. Picture this. A group of teenagers, comrades in the trench warfare of adolescence, bound together by the shared scars of their daily battles within the ironclad gates of a military school. For them, this night's party was an oasis, a brief respite in the desert of discipline. Yet unbeknownst to them, it was also the setting for a seismic shift that would finally tip the scales out of their favor. On this night, their collective energy would unwittingly breach realms beyond their wildest imaginations. As dusk bled into night, the usual trappings of a teenage gathering gave way to something far more charged, but not unusual for them. Small clusters, previously isolated in their dalliances with the dark arts, coalesced. Hypnotic suggestions whispered in corners. Fingers danced on spirit boards, and the air buzzed with the latent power of their collective will. For these young souls, each flirtation with the occult was, in their eyes, a reclaiming of power, a middle finger to the administrative staff who had sought to crush their spirits. That night, the intensity of their rites acted as a beacon, a clarion call to beings from the shadows. Among these rituals was the summoning of Bloody Mary, a challenge thrown down before the mirror and an invitation that would not go unanswered. Several girls gathered in the darkness of a bathroom to play the game, which many think became a catalyst. The repetition of that cursed name before the mirror was not taken with the gravity it deserved. It was a thrill, a dare, until the moment that it wasn't. Until the air shifted and the reflection in the glass no longer seemed their own. The girls, seeking to touch the veil, found instead that they had torn it asunder. What began as a game had invited in something, something that acknowledged their call. And so on the night of October 24th, 1979, the students of Miami Aerospace Academy stood on the precipice of the unknown. Not as mere observers, but as participants in a drama that would unfold with terrifying consequences. They had sought to reclaim their power, to carve a space for themselves in a world that sought to erase their identities, yet in their quest, they had opened a door to forces that would not be so easily controlled or dismissed. This was the night when everything changed. When a group of teenagers brushed against the arcane, and in doing so, set the stage for an event that would echo through the halls of the academy. The party quickly lost control, spiraling into a nightmare that none could have anticipated. The doors they believed they were merely unlocking were instead thrown wide open, inviting in forces that hungered for chaos. The transformation was abrupt. Laughter gave way to a charged silence, smiles to scowls. Personalities morphed before their eyes. Friends turned foes with no warning, no reason. Two boys, known for their inseparable bond, found themselves locked in a sudden, violent confrontation, driven by an animosity that was as foreign as it was fierce. This inexplicable shift in behavior, this descent into aggression, bore the hallmarks of paranormal influence. Entities began to weave through the crowd, puppeteering the students into acts of violence and hostility utterly alien to their true selves. The illusion of control over the dark forces they had flirted with shattered, revealing the terrifying truth. They were not the masters of this game, but mere pieces on a board designed by entities with their own motives beyond human comprehension. The infestation had begun. The demonic forces, subtle and insidious, had successfully infiltrated the party, twisting perceptions and actions to their will. What started as an evening of escape became a canvas for these entities to paint their own darkness, turning the Halloween gathering from a haven into a hunting ground. In their naivete, the students had believed they could court the shadows without consequence, that they could stir the paranormal pot and remained untouched by its contents. Yet, as the night descended into chaos, it became clear that they had not merely attracted the attention of the dark forces, but had become the focal point for a concentrated assault by malevolent energies. Satan, or so the belief goes, had fixed his gaze upon them, identifying this gathering as the perfect catalyst for a broader contagion. This harrowing transition from fun to fear underscored a chilling realization. In dabbling with the dark arts, in inviting in the unknown, they had relinquished the control they thought they were reclaiming. As dawn broke on October 25th, the stage was set for an unprecedented event at the academy. The pieces were all there. Students, their psyches frayed and worn from the relentless pressure of their environment, an undercurrent of fascination, even obsession with the occult, and an aggressive, almost electric contact with a realm beyond our own, teeming with entities awaiting their chance to cross over. The students themselves were a powder keg of pent-up energy and anxiety, ready to ignite at the slightest provocation. And ignite, it did. But what lit the fuse? A classroom session led by a teacher who, perhaps with good intentions but misguided execution, chose hypnosis as a means to calm the storm brewing within her students. Hypnosis, an ancient practice of reaching into the depths of the mind, holds the power to heal under the right guidance. Yet it also bears the potential for unintended consequences, especially when wielded by the inexperienced. This teacher, dabbling in the hypnotic arts without the requisite skill or caution, unwittingly opened a door not just to the subconscious minds of her students, but potentially to something far more unpredictable given the circumstances. In attempting a regression session, a technique complex and risky even for those trained, she risked unleashing the very forces they sought to understand or control. The irony of the situation lay in the choice of hypnosis itself. Here were students, already teetering on the edge of their ability to cope, subjected to a method meant to strip away their last available defenses. In a setting already saturated with tales and practices of the occult, this foray into the subconscious was akin to lighting a match in a room filled with gas. Critics of the decision might argue that hypnosis, especially in an environment already crackling with supernatural speculation and fear, was not just ill-advised, but potentially catastrophic. The practice, when misapplied, can blur the lines between suggestion and reality. For these students, already vulnerable and suggestible, the session represented not relief, but the removal of their final barriers to the influence of whatever had been awakened or invited during their occult experiments. In that charged classroom, under the guise of assistance, the teacher's insistence on hypnosis not only crossed ethical boundaries, but also tore through the spiritual ones. The girl, amidst her struggle and resistance, perhaps sensed the peril far more acutely than her peers or the teacher could ever comprehend. Was it merely fear, or did an entity within, sensing exposure through the vulnerable state hypnosis induces, push her to resist? The relentless push by the teacher left her with little choice but to acquiesce, setting the stage for a catastrophic unraveling. The foray into the girl's psyche was not just misguided. It was a detonator to a latent explosive of paranormal energy, accumulated not just from the previous night's occult experimentations, but perhaps from years of suppressed fear and trauma. As the hypnosis proceeded, it wasn't just the girl's mind that was unlocked, but a Pandora's box of dark energies, primed and ready to exploit this breach. The act of hypnosis didn't calm the waters, but stirred them further, possibly acting as the final push needed for the dark energies at play to manifest fully. It was a moment of critical mass, where the collective anxiety, the shared trauma, and the flirtation with the unknown converged into one singular, explosive event. As the Academy descended into chaos, it became clear that the boundaries between science and the supernatural, between healing and harm, were irrevocably blurred. The outcome was immediate and terrifying. Overwhelmed by an onslaught of horror that words can hardly encapsulate, the girl's flight to the restroom was a desperate attempt to escape not just the physical space of the classroom, but the clutches of something far more sinister. Her subsequent collapse, followed by an inexplicable levitation, were not just signs of demonic possession, but a clear indication that the threshold had been crossed. The levitation itself marked a turning point, a manifest signal that the spiritual warfare had escalated beyond a point of individual affliction to a collective assault. The friends who followed, concerned and unprepared, found themselves not just witnesses, but participants in a scenario that defied explanation. The dark forces, once invited, now saw an open field, a multitude of vulnerable spirits ripe for influence and control. The door they had opened, whether out of curiosity, defiance, or desperation, had welcomed entities that recognized no boundaries, respected no will but their own. In the aftermath, as the Academy reeled from the shockwave of the spiritual upheaval, the stark truth became impossible to ignore. The door that was opened did not merely allow a single entity to pass through, but became a gateway for a multitude, each drawn by the promise of unclaimed souls. The students, in their pursuit of liberation, had inadvertently chained themselves to a fate far darker, confrontation not just with their inner demons, but with forces that sought to exploit the very vulnerabilities that made them human. Possession, a concept steeped in the lore of cultures across the globe, transcends mere myth to touch upon the deeply unnerving possibility of entities beyond our comprehension exerting their will on the human realm, like at the Miami Aerospace Academy. For millennia, humanity has whispered tales of demonic presences, of unseen forces capable of infringing upon the physical world with terrifying consequences. In the hierarchy of the spirit realm, demons occupy a distinct and feared position. These entities, often described as fallen angels, embody the antithesis of human experience, having never lived, loved, or lost within the confines of a human body. The telltale signs of demonic activity are unmistakably oppressive. The air becomes thick with the stench of decay, rotting meat and the acrid burn of sulfur, sensory markers that herald the presence of something profoundly unholy. Such manifestations turn spaces of familiarity, be it homes or institutions like schools, into arenas of fear, where the ordinary becomes overshadowed by the spectral. Beyond the environmental disturbances, demons are attributed with the capacity to inflict physical harm. Reports of scratches, bites, and more violent assaults are not uncommon. Yet, of all the ways in which these entities can make their presence known, possession stands as the most visceral and profoundly disturbing. The act of a demon entering and taking control of a human body is a violation of the most sacred aspects of human autonomy, a phenomenon that occurs under exceedingly specific and rare conditions. On that fateful day at the Miami Aerospace Academy, the confluence of factors, traumatized psyches, an obsession with the occult, and the reckless invitation of dark forces, created a perfect storm for such a rare event. The phenomenon of demonic possession, as studied and reported by those versed in the esoteric and the divine, unfolds in a chillingly systematic manner, comprising three harrowing stages: infestation, oppression, and finally, full possession. Infestation marks the sinister overture to this dark symphony. It is the stage where the demonic presence makes its initial foray into the human realm, selecting its victim and announcing its presence with unsettling subtlety. The three knocks, a blasphemous mimicry of the Holy Trinity, serve as a harrowing herald of the malevolence that seeks entry, a prelude to the psychological siege that is to come. Oppression follows, a relentless campaign designed to weaken the spirit and resolve of the Chosen. It is a period marked by misfortune and despair, where the fabric of one's life seems to unravel under the weight of unseen forces. Accidents, financial ruin, and a cascade of negative occurrences serve to isolate and break down the individual, priming them for the final, devastating takeover. And then, the culmination of this dark progression, full possession. This is the moment the entity asserts total dominion over the victim, inhabiting them with an intelligence and will that is wholly other. The person becomes a vessel for an evil that is not their own, lost to the control of a force that seeks only to corrupt and destroy. At the Academy, the signs of this malignant process were manifesting with terrifying clarity. The students, already ensnared in their own occult explorations, had inadvertently laid the groundwork for their own spiritual undoing. The reckless games with spirit boards and tarot cards, intended as mere dalliance with the forbidden, had instead become the rites that invited darkness into their midst. The oppression was palpable, woven into the very fabric of their daily existence by the Academy's regime of trauma, deprivation, and punishment. The administration, whether wittingly or not, had prepared the ground for Satan's harvest, subjecting the students to conditions ripe for demonic incursion. The climax of the spiritual catastrophe unfolded in the most mundane of settings, a school restroom, where a girl's desperate flight from a hypnosis session became the stage for a stark revelation of possession. Surrounded by her horrified friends, her body's sudden, unnatural levitation served as a grotesque demonstration of the demon's power, a physical manifestation of the total usurpation of her will and agency. Levitation, in the lexicon of demonic activity, is not merely a display of supernatural strength. It is a physical statement of dominance, meant to be a visceral shock to all witnesses that defies rational explanation. It serves as the ultimate proof, not just of the demon's presence, but of its absolute control over the victim and its ability to flout the laws of nature at will. When law enforcement officials reached the Miami Aerospace Academy, they stepped into a scene that defied all expectations and training. The officers, trained to face danger head-on, found themselves navigating a crisis of an entirely different nature. Their primary objective was to locate someone in authority, someone who could shed light on the pandemonium that had engulfed the school. The figure that loomed largest in their search was Evaristo Marina, known to all as El General, the authoritarian heart of the Academy, whose draconian methods had shaped its very ethos. But as the devil's influence tore through the school, Marina was conspicuously absent. The man who had wielded control with such an unyielding grip was nowhere to be found, his office abandoned. The absence of El General at this critical juncture raised haunting questions. Where was the man who fashioned himself as the unassailable leader of these young minds? The Academy's quarters and classrooms, usually echoing with the commands of Marina and his staff, were eerily silent. The very individuals who had fashioned themselves as the unyielding pillars of the institution had vanished into thin air. The expectation of encountering some form of leadership, especially in a military-style academy, and particularly on a school day, was met with the bewildering reality that no one was there to provide answers or guidance. The absence of the school's authoritative figures during this critical juncture was as baffling as it is alarming. It was as if, at the moment when their presence was most needed, when the infernal chaos they had unwittingly courted reached its zenith, they had chosen to flee, abandoning their charges to face the consequences alone. As the morning gave way to noon, the oppressive energy that had gripped the academy began to dissipate, and the students, as if awakening from a nightmare, emerged from their trance-like state. The terror that had seized them receded. The ordeal had ended, but the echoes of what had transpired within those walls lingered on. The question of what exactly had descended upon the academy that day remained unanswered. The students, though freed from the immediate grip of whatever force had claimed their school, were left with the scars of the experience. The disappearance of Marina and his staff in the face of this crisis spoke volumes, casting a shadow over their legacy and leaving the community to grapple with the aftermath. The harrowing events had swiftly cascaded into the public sphere, igniting a firestorm of media attention and public scrutiny. "Hypnosis unleashes demons," declared the headlines, crystallizing the bewildered and terrified accounts of the students into a singular narrative of supernatural chaos. The story, as sensational as it was alarming, caught the attention of national news outlets, including the New York Times, propelling the incident from a local curiosity to a national enigma. The reaction from the community was swift and severe. Parents, confronted with the nightmarish accounts of possessions and pandemonium, were incensed. The immediacy of the response saw at least one teacher resigning in the wake of the controversy, while other parents, in a bid to protect their children from further exposure to such inexplicable dangers, withdrew them from the academy altogether. Yet, as quickly as the story had erupted into the public consciousness, it disappeared. Both the media and those authorities implicated in the scandal seemed eager to relegate the incident to lore, an uncomfortable chapter best left unexamined. The collective amnesia that followed suggested a desire to preserve reputations and prevent the lasting stain of such an unprecedented event from tarnishing the community. Evaristo Marina, the figure at the heart of the controversy, was quick to denounce the reports as nothing more than a smear campaign, a malicious attempt to undermine his leadership and the integrity of his academy. He posited that the allegations were the work of his adversaries, a nebulous group whose existence and motives remained as shadowy as the purported demonic forces that had infiltrated his school. To him, the incident was nothing more than a calculated fabrication, a ploy by political adversaries to tarnish his reputation amidst his numerous, albeit unsuccessful, forays into public office, framing the event as a scam and a mere byproduct of political machinations. Despite Marina's attempts to deflect blame and discredit the reports, the Academy's reputation continued to suffer in the years that followed. A series of scandals, ranging from accusations of sexual misconduct to the pregnancy of a young cadet, further marred the institution's already tarnished image. Police investigations and public outcry underscored the deep-seated issues that plagued the Academy, revealing a pattern of misconduct and negligence that could no longer be ignored or dismissed. As the decade progressed, the cumulative weight of these scandals began to erode at the foundation of Marina's empire. The legacy of the Miami Aerospace Academy was now associated with a series of sordid controversies that spoke to a profound failure of leadership and oversight. The question of whether Marina's enemies were real or conjured became secondary to the undeniable reality of an institution in crisis, a school that had become synonymous with scandal and supernatural speculation. The downfall of the Miami Aerospace Academy was as dramatic as the events that precipitated it. A gradual exodus of students, eroding parental trust, and a deteriorating physical infrastructure led to the institution's relocation to a hotel, a move that only underscored its decline. City officials' condemnation of the new premises as deplorable was the final nail in the coffin, culminating in the Academy's closure in 1988. Evaristo Marina, the once indomitable general at the helm of this beleaguered ship, passed away in 2009, leaving behind a legacy mired in controversy. For a while, it seemed the bizarre tale of mass possession that rocked the Academy in 1979 might fade into obscurity with Marina's passing. The first-hand accounts of those who lived through that tumultuous time had, for years, been whispered about more than openly discussed. The reluctance of former students to speak out stems not only from the fear of social stigma, often attached to paranormal experiences, but also from a broader societal reluctance to acknowledge such phenomena. This stigma can overshadow all aspects of a person's life, unjustly narrowing their identity to a single extraordinary experience. Yet the reticence to revisit the dark chapter of the Academy's history might also be attributed to a more ominous consideration. The abrupt cessation of the demonic activity that had so thoroughly gripped the school and its occupants does not necessarily signify a resolution. The unsettling possibility remains that the entity summoned during that harrowing period might not be gone for good. The demons, having once found a doorway into our world, could potentially cross that threshold again. For many former cadets, the scars of their experiences are lasting, shaping their perceptions of themselves and their past. The saying that the best day at Aerospace was their last speaks volumes about the deep-seated trauma and relief associated with leaving such a fraught environment behind. The alumni, many of whom endured firsthand the surreal chaos of that day, often chose the path of silence. Their testimonies, when they do emerge, paint a picture of a pressure cooker of tensions and unexplained phenomena that finally, and spectacularly, exploded. The mystery surrounding the events of October 25th, 1979 at the Miami Aerospace Academy has prompted numerous theories, ranging from calculated hoax to mass hysteria, each seeking to explain the unexplainable. Among these, the notion that the students orchestrated a hoax as a form of rebellion against the oppressive regime of Evaristo Marina and the faculty holds a certain appeal, especially to the paranormal skeptics. It suggests a collective act of defiance, a tangible protest against the physical and psychological confines imposed by the institution. Yet to those who bore witness to the events of that day, the hypothesis of a hoax falls short of accounting for the sheer magnitude and nature of the occurrences. The students at Miami Aerospace Academy, while united in their discontent, certainly lacked the cohesion and motive to engineer an event of such complexity and impact, not to mention creativity. The phenomena reported, levitations, inexplicable physical harm, and other manifestations of paranormal activity, extend far beyond the capabilities of a group of disgruntled students seeking retribution. The dismissal of these events as mere fabrication does a disservice to the testimonies of those who experienced them firsthand. Eyewitness accounts describe actions and phenomena that defy logical explanation, suggesting forces at play that transcend the realm of hoaxes or psychological phenomena. These testimonies point to something far more unsettling, a series of events that cannot be neatly categorized or dismissed by conventional understanding. The debate over the nature of the incident at Miami Aerospace, whether an elaborate hoax, a case of mass hysteria, or a genuine supernatural occurrence, remains unsolved. The lack of comprehensive documentation and the reluctance of many to speak openly about their experiences contribute to the mystery. Yet the impact of that day on those who lived through it is undeniable. In the absence of definitive explanations, the incident invites a broader reflection on the nature of belief, the capacity for the extraordinary, and the human need to find meaning in the face of inexplicable events. It challenges us to consider the possibility of realities beyond our comprehension, and the importance of approaching the unknown with an open mind, and a respect for the experiences of those who have encountered it firsthand. The events at Miami Aerospace, while extraordinary and seemingly unique, are not without precedent. The phenomenon of mass possessions, though rare, has been documented across different cultures and time periods. The recurrence of mass possessions around the world suggests that these events, however inexplicable, share a common thread. They emerge in small, concentrated outbreaks, leaving communities and scholars grappling with questions of cause and effect. The suggestion that these incidents are of diabolical origin points to a belief in forces that operate outside the bounds of human time and comprehension, entities for whom the passage of centuries is inconsequential. In the 21st century, the concept of possession continues to fascinate, terrify, and intrigue societies around the globe, Far from being relegated to ancient folklore or the dark chapters of historical witch trials, possession claims a spot in contemporary discourse, straddling the realms of religion, psychology, and the ever-popular culture of the paranormal. Today, the resurgence of exorcism in some religious practices highlights a continued belief in the power of unseen forces to influence and even control human behavior. Major religious institutions, including the Catholic Church, have reported an increasing demand for exorcisms, leading to the training of more exorcists to meet the needs of the faithful seeking relief from what they perceive as demonic influence. This modern-day engagement with the concept of possession isn't limited to religious contexts. The burgeoning interest in the paranormal and supernatural, fueled by media and entertainment, has brought the topic into living rooms and academic circles alike. Television shows, movies, and podcasts like this one explore themes of possession and exorcism with a fervor that speaks to a collective fascination with the boundaries between the known and the unknowable. At the intersection of spirituality and mental health, beliefs about possession challenge our frameworks for understanding behavior and consciousness. For some, the explanation of possession by malevolent spirits provides a narrative structure for experiences of distress, offering a language and a set of rituals, exorcism, prayer, spiritual healing, for addressing what might otherwise be incomprehensible. However, this intersection also raises critical questions about the diagnosis and treatment of mental health conditions, highlighting the importance of sensitive, informed approaches that respect cultural and religious beliefs while advocating for psychological care. The belief in possession also speaks to our broader human engagement with the unknown and the unseen. It reflects this deep-seated curiosity about the nature of consciousness, the existence of otherworldly forces potentially within our own bodies, and the potential for interactions between the human and the supernatural. In navigating the modern landscape of possession beliefs, society and us as listeners are tasked with balancing skepticism and openness, scientific understanding, and spiritual respect. The challenge lies in fostering a dialogue that allows for the coexistence of diverse perspectives on possession, encouraging a holistic approach to understanding human experiences that defy easy categorization. The conversation about possession, its realities, its representations, and its implications continues to evolve, offering opportunities for deeper insight into the complexities of the human psyche, the mysteries of the spiritual realm, and the unending quest to understand it. But for now, we're left standing at the edge of an abyss, the chasm between what we know and what we can only wonder at. The haunting saga of the Miami Aerospace Academy doesn't just add another layer of mystery to our ever-expanding tapestry of the unknown. It forces us to confront and acknowledge the vast expanse of our ignorance. In navigating possession of demons and unseen forces, we're invited to reflect not just on the stories themselves, but on what they reveal about us, about our fears, our desires, our beliefs, and our relentless quest for meaning in a universe that often seems indifferent to our inquiries. As we think about this thin line between the seen and unseen, the known and unknown, we are left with more questions than answers. And perhaps that is the point. I want to build on the words of Rainer Maria Rilke, the poet, which we began on our JonBenet episode, but didn't give you the full context. They write, "Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers, which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. Until we meet again, let us not shy away from the darkness, but embrace it as a canvas of infinite possibilities. Remember, in the silence of the unexplored, in the gaps between our certainties, lies the potential for wonder, for discovery, for a deeper connection to the mysteries that bind us. Live the questions now. Keep seeking. Keep wondering. Keep questioning. And remember, the walls around us are alive with stories, waiting for those brave enough to listen. Thank you once again to all my listeners for joining us on today's episode. I truly hope you enjoyed a more paranormal episode today. I know, following off of JonBenet Ramsey, which was very true crime, I felt it was time that I owed you a good old-fashioned haunting. So I hope you enjoyed this one. Now, I have a couple very short announcements. First and foremost is, now it's your turn. The stories that we've shared today and throughout this podcast are just the beginning and will continue into the future, but I know that each of us carries our own tales of the strange, the unexplained, and the paranormal. And I would like to encourage you to dive into the depths of your own experiences and to share your questions, your wanderings, your wonderings, and most importantly, to share those with all of us. Your stories are even more the lifeblood of this conversation, because while every story we tell is rooted in history, our stories are the ones from the now. So, I would like to open the door to begin listener tales on this podcast if we start to receive enough. If you have a story, be it long, short, you can absolutely write that down and email it to me at jeremy@whenwallscantalktarot.com. I will start to collect those, and then as we start to receive enough episodes, I will start to release listener tale episodes along with our production episodes. And the thing that I think would be so fun is that no matter how you write your story, I can either read it exactly as you wrote it, or I can always give it the good old-fashioned When Walls Can Talk treatment with sound effects and kind of take us into your world a little bit. So, if you have stories, please send those over. We'll start to collect them for listener tales. But also, please join us on Instagram at whenwallscantalk with underscores for spaces. And please become part of our growing community on our Facebook group. I have been a little inactive on there lately. I will acknowledge that, partially on the heels of my national pageant being done. But I have grand plans to get more involved and for that to be a place where we can engage with fellow listeners who, like you, are probably drawn to the mysteries of the unseen, like this story. Together, I really want to use that space to keep this dialogue alive, challenge our perceptions, and perhaps in the process, we can together discover something truly extraordinary, maybe come to some answers for the questions that we all have. But outside of that, I have to once again thank you for being here. My name is Jeremy Haig. I'm your host, editor, researcher. I do the whole thing myself, and I'm just really proud to be here with you. So please take care of yourselves. I will catch you next week for an episode on Robert the Doll. If you made it to the end, you're welcome. See you then.